You're listening to Have Mike Will Travel with Elizabeth Santry.
Hey, welcome to the show. Today's guest is Dominic Episcopo, and he invited me to sit down and talk with him in a church that was built in the 1800s. It's actually where he lives and works. We were able to chat about things like the significance of your work environment, the digital shift in photography, and the nature of being creative. I hope you enjoy the show. So this space is incredible. I really appreciate you letting me in. So I feel like that's a really good place to start with the questions about environment, because you, like I said before, you've always had really great spaces. So I'm curious,
I could do this for you. Good.
You'll be fine. What does environment mean to you? Like, obviously it means something to you.
Yeah, I think environment obviously means a lot to me. And, you know, actually since college, I have not lived or worked in a space with conventional ceilings.
Wow.
Like, I've only been in big, spread out, like high ceiling loft areas since my first place after college.
So, you just noticed that, or did you think?
I just noticed that. That wasn't by design. They were just by design. The by design part was that they were just cool spaces.
Right,
but now I think that my body, myself, I just got used to that. This is what it is for me.
You know,
like this is the kind of space I have to live
right,
in.
Right, I
haven't lived since college in anything but.
What, like, where would you use, like, what is it about it? Is like, they have to be dynamic, they have to be serene, they have to be clean, they have to be, so I guess tall is one attribute you said.
I just like space, and I definitely like all that space above your head.
Okay.
I think it makes help you think better, maybe.
Right.
You know, there's nothing weighing down on you, and it is kind of freeing to the mind to not have something right over your head.
Because I was having a conversation recently where it was somebody who deals with clutter, who has a lot of clutter in their life, and I was trying to explain to them, when you walk into your space and it's full of clutter, I said, like, actual physical space that's open and empty allows people to think. You don't realize, but clarity of...
Because you feel the void. You fill the void.
Yeah. But when you have a guest in, you don't realize how, like, you know, apprehensive or confronting that can be to a guest when there's no space to think.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. So, what was I going to say? So, you've always had a good space, and is it...
Well, space is important. Like, you know, everybody puts all their energy into their home.
Mm-hmm.
But really, they spend 40 to 60 hours a week at work in their office.
When did you make the switch to combining the two?
10 years ago when I came here.
Okay.
So, but even then, you know, my house was nice and it was a big space, but my studio was too.
Right.
And everyone can't believe the amount of money or the effort or energy that I put into my studio.
Right.
I'm like, but this is where I spend the majority of my life.
I'm
here for 40 to 60 hours.
Now, how do you, a lot of people talk about working from home, the struggle of, you know, sometimes it's motivation, sometimes it's creating that separation. Okay, I'm in work mode now. I mean, do you have that issue? I mean, you have a gorgeous, stunning space. So off the cuff, I would say, how could you have that problem? This is a very stimulating environment. But, you know, you have a family here. Do you find it hard to separate?
Well, it's funny because it's like this full circle thing, because when I started out of necessity, my studio was my home. Like I lived in a loft and that was my studio, but that's because that's all I could afford.
Right.
And at that time, it was like you never left work. It was always in your face and it was hard to be in home mode.
Yeah.
You were always at work. And then I got a studio outside of work and I did that for many years, and that worked the separation between the two. So I was a little nervous about combining them again and coming back to it, but I am in such a different place in my life that it has worked in a different way.
Okay.
And there's part of me that is always still in work mode, but at the same time, I enjoy that. That's who I am.
My
work is who I am, so I don't have this need to separate it. And at the same time, I seamlessly separate it, because now that I have a family, it's just... First of all, it's easy that to go to the office is to go down a flight of steps and I don't have to leave the building.
Right.
It just makes life that much easier. Right. And I love the convenience that I could go down at 11 o'clock at night and sit at the computer and do work stuff.
Right.
And it really is seamless.
But where's the flip side? Where and how do you disconnect? I mean, fully? Or do you, I mean.
I don't know if I do. I'm very, you know, this is going to sound cynical, but the work part of it I've done for so long now that it's very easy for me to disconnect on some level because I'm looking for the break. Like I'm older and more mature, and it's much easier for me to be like, I don't feel like like dealing with this right now.
Right. Oh, okay.
And then the part that doesn't disconnect, I kind of embrace. It really is not a problem. Like,
okay.
I enjoy that. Well, because again, it's all who I am.
Right.
You know, even my personal work as a photographer and my commercial work as a photographer, it's all like, I don't really compartmentalize each different part of who I am.
Okay.
It's all me. It's all my life. I love it all. So I don't have a problem being in it all the time.
Okay. So, but what, does your family ever complain? Like, oh, Dad, or, you know, Dom, stop working. You know what I mean?
No, because I'm not a workaholic.
Okay.
I work a lot, but it's because I have no choice. But I'm not a workaholic. Yeah, like I definitely, I could, you know, Facebook has ruined it for me and everybody else because it's so easy to get distracted and not, and just play.
Right. Well, you had said something about maturity, which, you know, I'm kind of like a jack of all trades. I've tried a lot of different things, but my favorite projects to do are the ones where, I don't know if you experienced this, where you just have a certain sense of faith that you know what you're doing, that you don't have to go too crazy with research. You know, like there's certain jobs that I take on a freelance level that I know that I can just show up and that the skills and the muscle memory, it's all there. And that when it's time to work, I just snap into place and do it. And that's, it's really rewarding mentally to just have to know that you've trained enough to do something that you can just show up and be. So is that part of it as well? Like faith in yourself that you know you can accomplish what needs to get done.
Well, that's absolutely true. And they're the muscle memory. And there are jobs that, you know, I could just show up with no prep and I know I can make it happen because I've done this 900 times.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I have to personally strike a balance of I get a little too laid back about stuff. And there are things that I should research more before I actually step into them.
Yeah.
But there is something about the having whatever it is, 20 or 25 years of experience that you just step into something and I know I can make it work.
Well, that's a good segue for me because I think having known you for a long time and watching the evolution of your subject matter change, you know, you started, I know there's music for a while, then it was maybe sort of celebrity or portrait, and then, you know, you've gotten into food. And I think that's really interesting. Explain to me, like, was it out of boredom or just create, like, wanting something new or just being stimulated? Like, why the shift in subject matter?
It was never a conscious decision where I woke up today and I'm like, all right, I'm done shooting rock stars.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to shoot meat.
Yeah,
it never happened quite like that. It's just a natural evolution of either an artist, which is a weird word because I think it's a little pretentious word, or the evolution of just a person, like a human being.
Okay, speaking of, you got some human beings going.
Yeah, and your life, you just grow and you change and
life
goes on and I have different interests. I don't collect the same things I do now that I did 20 years ago, so I'm looking at things different, you know, like I just, as a person, you just constantly are in this evolution.
Yeah, yeah. So I have another evolutionary question, and this is in no way to make you feel old, but because I'm aging myself as well, the evolution of the craft. Like when I met you, it was analog, man. It was film, and now there's a digital. And I feel like you've seamlessly transitioned.
Well, not seamlessly. I kicked and screamed.
Okay. Now, of course, maybe on the inside, on the outside, you were cool as a cucumber, dog.
Well, yeah. I mean, and now it makes all the sense in the world to me. I can't imagine going back to film.
Oh my God.
But when the transition happened, I went kicking and screaming.
Right.
And I didn't resent it. I mean, I am one to just embrace and go with the flow. What I resented was I was teaching and the students no longer felt the need to take good photographs because they could fix them later or composite them
later, whatever. Right.
And so I feel like they, as artists, as the next generation of artists, were really being deprived something because they really weren't teaching themselves how to see, like, because everything was done later. And I guess it's just a different type of art, you know, but it's closer to maybe an illustrator than it is to what I traditionally think of as a photography and capturing a moment, because they weren't capturing moments. They were creating them, you know, not in the camera, but in the computer.
Post-production, for sure, for sure. And I think that's what intimidated me ultimately from photography back then, is knowing that I wasn't the super engineer and that I was more of a creative thinker and not so much the mechanical person who could, you know, because you couldn't fake it back then.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's changed the industry because you could fake it and everybody does.
Yeah.
I mean, there's twice as many photographers and half as much work because half of the agencies could do it in their conference room on a piece of white paper.
Yeah.
And everybody with a fancy camera and a computer is suddenly a photographer and I'm competing against them.
Right.
And you know, it's a lot of post work and stuff. And that's still not my cup of tea. I mean, I tend to still try to make images in the camera.
Yeah. Do you outsource a lot of that stuff?
I do. I don't. Yeah. Not most of my retouching is.
Yeah. Okay.
Outsourced.
So speaking of creativity, do you think creativity can be taught? I mean, you taught. I don't know if you do. You still teach?
No.
Okay. So do you think that that's something to be taught, or is it totally innate? When you're born with this stuff.
Well, on some level, it could be taught, but the people that are really good at it, it's just in them.
Yeah.
You know, I think at best it teaches you how to tap into and how to celebrate and how to really, you know, get the most out of what creativity you have. But I don't know if it could teach you to be creative. It's not going to teach you to have a great thought. But it definitely... you could teach people how to access that and what to do with that and all that kind of stuff, how to get in touch with themselves and their, the world around them and, you know, and be sensitive to that type of stuff.
Right.
It's a tricky question because we both went to UArts and, you know, they teach you how to see.
Yes, I really concur.
Do teach you how to see. And, you know, the kids that are coming out of the Art Institute, which is more like a vo-tech for photography as opposed to UArts, which is more of an aesthetic-based program. So their argument would be they could teach you to be creative. And I'm sort of making their argument because they do. But, boy, that is like a trick question because they're, even at UArts, they're students that were obviously just so talented that all they needed was a little bit of guidance.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So there is something you're born with, and then there is something that is environmental or taught.
I see a, we were talking about like vocation and what and practicality. Photography to me is really similar to music in the way that I feel like sometimes you can either come from two camps. You can be the creative or you can be the engineer. And, you know, the output can be similar. Like an example would be like in the 90s hip-hop, you know, De La Soul was often like considered the engineers. Like they loved being in the studio and they were really good at manufacturing and getting those beats per minute and everything down. While I think Tribe was more, you know, visceral and more just, you know, but the output to a listener sounds similar because they're in the same genre, the same time.
Sure, sure.
And so what camp do you think you fall into? I mean, do you love the mechanics of photography? Or do you love the creation of an idea?
I think it's the creation of an idea for me personally. Right. I'm really clear on that.
Yeah.
Because that gets back to the whole digital thing. I'm not the post-production dude.
Okay. Okay.
You know, I so am not that guy. And again, it's because I was taught in a way that, you know, you made the photo in the camera.
Right.
I mean, there's all kind of decisions that are made after the fact. But, yeah, I'm definitely the guy that makes it in the camera. And I do like the comparison. I always think of photography as being very close to music, and not just photography, just as an artist. Like, I think musicians are incredible creative people because their work speaks to so many people. When you think about it, you know, like, you know, Picasso or Warhol might be the most significant artist of our time, but think about how many more people Bob Dylan's work spoke to.
Right.
You know, like when you really get down to numbers and, the amount
exposure
of people that it really changed their lives, Dylan was more relevant or significant than either Warhol or Picasso.
So I have a question. Do you ever like secretly wish you were in a rock star? Do you know what I mean?
Because, I'm a rock star. I try to live like a rock star. Even though I don't play, I don't even play an instrument.
Right, do you ever wish you could?
I got six guitars over there.
Amazing. So, okay, genie in a bottle situation right now. Would you like switch the comparatively your talent for photography if someone showed up and said, I could give this to you, the same equivalent talent in music, but no longer could you take a picture to save your life? Would you switch?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why not?
Yeah.
Well, if somebody was guaranteeing me, I'm not going to fall. Sure. I would love to
switch it up. Would you miss it? But I guess...
At this point, no.
Okay. So maybe if you were like a 20-year-old man, you maybe not the same.
Yeah. Because my view of photography is very different at this point in my life. Okay. Then I don't have the same enthusiasm that I had when I was 25.
Right.
And a lot of that has to do with, again, just growing and maturing and been there and done that.
Right.
And I also have a family now, which I started a family really late in life. So that is sort of like the new page in my life, you know? So, you know, that's like a whole new world for me.
Right.
And I'm so focused on that.
Okay.
And, I mean, I still love what I do, and the transition that I am making, and everyone thinks it's so obvious and it really isn't, is I shoot tons of video now. Right. I shoot tons of commercials. And
okay.
I'm still kind of finding my legs in that. Mm-hmm. Like, and I've been doing it for about 3 years, and I do a lot of TV spots. I mm-hmm. do. I mean, the first 10 jobs I had this year, 8 of them were video.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I'm doing a lot of it, but I love photography more than I love video.
Okay.
Still.
Okay.
But, I mean, it's a whole different thing. Everyone's right. like, oh, they're so similar. And they're really no. not so
I've
similar.
Done both as well.
There's
I know
nothing
what you
alike
mean.
About them, except for they, you know, they both render an image that yeah. looks, that's not a painting.
Yeah.
that looks like a person, you know?
So I really like to ask us about travel. And I don't want to presume that family people don't travel because they want to stay home. But I feel like it is a consideration. And especially with you. You've got this fantastic home where you almost, you know, there's no need to leave. You've got such a beautiful home. But where does travel sit professionally and personally for you? Do you get chance to? Does work?
Oh, I travel a lot for work.
Okay.
Yeah, I travel a lot for work. My average travel job is 3 to 5 days,
okay.
and I'm back. So
mm-hmm.
that's no big deal. And
right.
it's a nice break to get
right.
away.
Right.
And I tend to go to places where they can't hire photographers. So I'm not often going to L.A. and New York and even Miami, although I went to Miami once this year already
mm-hmm.
for a shoot.
Mm-hmm.
But in major cities where they could hire professional photographers is not usually where my clients are bringing me to shoot stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to go to Wisconsin and Missouri
mm-hmm.
and Mississippi and Iowa and
mm-hmm.
Oklahoma and Kansas, and
mm-hmm.
which is kind of awesome because these are places I would never have gone to otherwise. I'm not vacationing in Kansas or
mm-hmm.
Oklahoma, but I
no
get
offense.
To see the country on somebody else's dime.
Right, right, right. That's fantastic.
Yeah, and it, like I said, they're 2 to 3 day, they're 3 to 5 day shoots. Every now and then we get like a 2-weeker or a 10-dayer, which
right.
is a little tricky with the family.
Right.
But
do you
I
find
enjoy
travel
it.
To be like refreshing or taxing, like physically? Do you know what
it's
I mean?
Both. It's
come
both.
Back drained,
I mean,
you're excited.
Because we fly with, you know, anywhere from 5 to 8 bags. And,
oh,
you know,
right.
and I'm, you know, I'm monitoring bags and a crew of 3 or 4 guys.
Right,
and,
right.
you know, and everybody's an adult, but I still feel like the parent. Like,
yeah.
I'm still responsible for everybody.
Right.
And so you're, like, herding cats the whole time.
Yeah.
But we do it. When we do it a lot, we're pretty, like, clockwork. It's
okay.
like a well-lubed machine. And
yeah.
it's, and then when I travel with my family, it is a piece of cake.
Oh, you're
because
the train's
I have
down.
Lot less people to deal with. I know my way around airports, and I'm not traveling with 5 or 8 bags.
Right, right,
it's
right.
just so much simpler.
That's
even
funny.
With an infant. Like, we did it from Enzo has been on an airplane from when he was 1.5 up until, you
yeah.
know, in January we
That's
went down
cool.
to Florida. So, you know, but it's so much easier
yeah.
with him and his gear than me and
yeah.
my gear.
Right, that's an amazing way to look at it. So you're talking about being traveling and literally being the parent, metaphorically being the parent. I was just wondering about mentorship. You know, you taught, but have you ever been in an experience where you've pulled someone individually aside and said, look, you know, I want to mentor you specifically, and just really kind of talk about what you know and share and try to mold somebody's mind?
I've never had that conversation out loud with somebody. I've had it in my head.
Oh, okay.
And
like
I
I'm making effort
say,
for this person because I
yeah,
want to make
Yeah, most them. Of my assistants. And my assistants tend to be around for a while.
Okay.
My first assistant was around for 14 years.
Mm.
And then I had Manny.
Mm-hmm.
And Manny was around for probably 5 or 6 years. I still work with Manny a little
mm-hmm.
bit. And now I've had this kid, Drew, for about 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And they all become a, you know, definitely a mentoring kind of
mm-hmm.
situation, because
mm-hmm.
I end up getting involved in their life personally and caring about
right.
like what happens to them
yeah.
personally when they move on from me or
yeah.
whatever. So
well, talk about going back to teaching, like what were some of the pros and cons of teaching for you personally?
Well, I did it to get out of this vacuum of being by myself all day
right,
and,
right.
you know, working inside of, you know, not really being part of a bigger community. I mean, you could say, yes, I'm part of the advertising community or the commercial photography community in town, but we all have our own workspaces and
yeah.
we're not together.
Right.
So I love the idea of getting thrown back into a art or creative-centric kind of community
yeah.
at UArts. That was one of my main things of doing it and giving back to that community.
Right.
And the first few classes were wonderful. You guys
mm-hmm.
were still, to this
mm-hmm.
day, the best classes I've had. And you
really?
Guys have
cool.
all gone on to stuff. Like,
yeah.
I've been in touch with so many people
yeah.
or art directors that I actually work for now.
Oh, really?
Or
wow.
people that have come through my life,
yeah.
you know.
Back around.
Yeah, in a great way. But at the same time, school, it started to become a drag.
Yeah.
And the students became less interested.
Okay.
And I'm sure not doing it.
Like, do you think if
yeah,
you had
without criticizing the college, it's because everybody got in.
Oh, okay.
It was
much
more exclusive at first, and the kids that were in there cared about it.
I see.
They were interested in being photographers.
Okay.
They weren't just taking up space and spending daddy's money.
Okay.
And then it turned into that.
Okay.
It turned into the admissions department were letting more and more kids in, I guess, to make their numbers.
Right.
And half the kids in the class did not give a shit.
Wow.
And it was so difficult to keep in my head in the game when they didn't care, because if they don't care, I don't care. What do I care? I'm not paying for this. I'm being paid to be here.
Right.
You're paying to be here.
You
know, and to go to art school, I always thought was a privilege.
Because, mm-hmm, so did I.
You know, I mean, it's
There's
art
no guarantees
school.
Afterwards,
you're not,
yeah,
and you're not sitting there reading book after book and doing all this like really boring studies. I mean, you're really given these opportunities to just be creative and to act like a big kid as an adult. And, and they were just squandering that. And it just got under my skin. And I was like, I don't need this anymore. It's just not.
Right. Now, if you were to ever have to go back to school, I mean, I'm talking like early, early years. And maybe, you know, being more with the awareness that you have of yourself, would you ever pick a different path? I mean, we joked around about music, but like, would you pick a different path ultimately?
No,
you
I did the right thing.
Place? Okay.
Yeah, I definitely did the right thing.
So how would you define, I feel like success is a very subjective word. Keep saying this over in my interviews, but I love to hear what people define as. I think it's really important to come up with your own definition, because otherwise to measure yourself against other people is just such a drag. It's the worst thing to do.
Yeah,
so
terrible.
What is your definition of success? It could be spiritual, it could be financial, it could be emotional, professional, whatever. But what to you feels successful? And once you've defined it, are you there yet, or are you still going?
I think you're always going. I mean, I think you always have to be challenging yourself, and it really has to be a personal thing. The worst thing you could do is measure yourself up against other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to do that. Again,
really?
It's about growing and getting older. I remember when I shot the Beastie Boys back in the day, and everybody thought that was so wonderful.
Yeah.
The way I looked at it is like, here are guys that are my age, and look how successful they are.
Oh,
I'm nothing compared to what the success that they have. And that's what I was comparing myself to.
Okay, okay. And
it's a no-win situation.
Right. When did you make the break? When did you come self-aware enough?
I don't have these, like, moments of, like, you know, where I had this affinity, you know? Like, I just think as you get older and, you know, you're happy and, like, long as we're financially stable, that I'm not feeling desperate around money. Because I think that's something that, you know, freaks people out. And it's not about being rich, but it's not... But I think it is about not feeling desperate.
Well, there's a lot of spiritual leaders. I read about this stuff where they talk about it's the idea of abundance versus scarcity. If you are in a scarcity mindset and you feel like everything's not going to come to you, there's a certain panic and anxiety, and your behavior and your actual body chemistry will change.
Sure.
And you're prone to sickness, all these bad things.
Yeah, it's all stress and everything.
But the belief, the constant belief of being present and believing that it's abundant, that there's enough, whatever it is that you're after, there's enough for everyone. I mean, that's the trick.
Or that it's okay.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
It's so hard. Do you feel like you can achieve that? Do you feel like that?
Yeah, I'm getting there now as I get older.
Yeah.
But that's also because as I get older, I've acquired stuff that is valuable.
Okay.
So suddenly I have a net worth. So it's a double-edged sword because I do feel that way, but I also have the security of I have things.
Right.
Like,
so
when I say things, I mean like properties and stuff
right,
like that.
Okay. So besides, let's talk about things for a quick second. Besides the obvious, family, pets, you know, your passport, you know, that there's a fire, like what are like two or three things that you would, like stuff-wise? I mean, because I think the ultimate goal is not to be super attached to stuff, but let's just...
Yeah, because your stuff will own you.
Exactly.
I mean,
but let's keep it real. We're American. There's a consumer.
We like shit. Yeah.
Like, let's just get real. What is it? Like, what are some of the top three things? You know, like, would it be your work? Would it be other people's work? Would it be an album, like a record? Or, you know, or is it a piece of furniture? What's like something that you would definitely not want to see yourself without if a split-second decision you had to wipe everything clean, stuff-wise?
Oh, well, I mean, all the stuff in my life, and I'm a collector. I'm always go from one collection to another. I'm always collecting and acquiring. But at the same time, when it really came down to it, I could walk away from all of this.
Okay, cool.
I mean, I really think I could.
That's fantastic.
I don't want to.
Right.
I really don't want to. I love my stuff.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is... I mean,
when do you feel like you can move on to a different collection? Because I like to collect things, but I don't know if I'm have enough of a collection to call myself a collector if I'm that good at it. But when do you kind of, when is the boredom or when is the interest into picking up another collection and starting fresh?
It just happens. It just happens. Something that I like and then I buy one and before you know it, I have 25 of them.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to be interrupted.
Yeah, I've got some people walking in. Oh.
Just ignore me. Ignore me like a stone.
So well, your child is in the next room. How were you as a kid? What kind of kid were you?
I don't know. Yeah, that's my mother.
you blocked it out? Do you not have any memories?
No. What kind of kid was I? I was never into sports. Okay. I'm still not.
Right.
I was definitely a creative kid. I was definitely into the arts even as a kid.
When did you start making art that you would call art? Like, do you remember an age where you were like, and this is...
Well, our town always had like a window painting contest at the holidays. I grew up in a small town, you know, like Bryn Mawr. And all the, on the main drag, all the businesses would donate their window. And we, at Halloween, you would submit drawings and then you would get picked and they, everybody, all the windows would get painted. And then it would be a contest. And I remember doing that from when I was, when I say really young, probably sixth, seventh, eighth grade. I mean, that's a memory far back. I remember being even in grammar school, and I still have, you know, we made Play-Doh heads. Like, we made clay heads and stuff, and I still have one that I remember it was good, and the teacher loved it. And I mean, I guess it was that positive reinforcement from my early childhood that made me feel confident around my creativity something. So I just had that moment just now with you in this conversation that, you know, I just went back to that, and I'm like, yeah, that probably is some really positive reinforcement that happened really when I was young that helped create my idea of who I am.
Okay, cool. So the, it's the belief and the confidence. Like,
well, yeah, I think the same thing happens in the negative way too. If somebody knocked you down at a young age, you probably your rest of your life could never would never believe that you could do it.
Right, right, right.
But if somebody lifts you up at a young age, you kind of put it in your head that, oh, I got this. And you carry that. You make decisions when you were like 4, 5, 6 years old that you carry with you the rest of your life. And then when you think about it as an adult that you're making a decision based on something, interpretation from when you were six. I mean, when it's a positive thing, that's wonderful. But most of the time, it's a negative thing that stands out that you take with you.
Yeah. Is there any future projects or things like to tackle, to do, to see, like creatively that you, you know, I hate the expression bucket list. I think it's overused. But do you know what I mean? That kind of like still, not like in a super competitive way, but more in a pleasurable, like I'd love to get
I mean, the book was something like that. But I have a book out and that was like bucket list, if you excuse the term. But it is. It's like you check, I got that. Now I might do more books, but I, you know, you get that first one off your chest. And
I love
like,
how it was funny, the book. You know,
yeah,
there
it's
was
definitely,
a big
I'm a court jester of the photography world.
Yeah, are you?
No, I don't know. something I'm working on now, I don't know if it's creative, but I am archiving. I'm going back and pulling up all my rock star photographs because now most of them are 15, 20 years old. And a lot of these bands, some of the people have passed away. Exactly. Some of them, they were not big when I photographed them and now they're massive. Yeah. And, you know, like Good Charlotte, I shot on like, you know, before their first album came out, I shot them a couple times.
Sonic Youth, I remember.
I shot Sonic Youth. I mean, they're not together anymore. Right. We shot the Beastie Boys. Right. I mean, but I probably have 100 bands or so. So I'm trying to put a portfolio of all the best of the best of that together. And
when G-Love, I mean, that's like a Philadelphia connection.
Yeah, that's somebody I did. Yeah, I mean, a Philadelphia connection, I have a, like another 100 bands.
Yeah.
I'm trying to just deal with national acts, which I think of the Roots or G-Love as national acts. But then if you go right into just the Philadelphia acts, in the 90s, I photographed every single band that was around in the 90s in Philly.
So is there anything specific about Philadelphia that, that gives to you as an artist? Like, do you think you could... You know, do you think that it's specific to Philadelphia or
well,
are you
I think,
just a creative guy and you would have, wherever you ended up, you would have made this, this life?
Well, I think that Philadelphia for artists in general is such a great stepping stone because it's a city, which I think an artist really needs a city to some degree. At least I do as an artist. But I mean, cities are creative places way more than suburbs are. And this is a city that you could afford to live in as an artist. It's a great stepping stone. We lose a lot of great people because as soon as they become successful, they move on. But at the same time, as an artist, you can never do what you, I mean, I couldn't do this in Manhattan.
Right. So what are the pros and cons of sticking around? Because that is the truth. I think there's a ceiling and people feel, a lot of people feel the need to leave.
Yeah, because it's not a market. It's
right. Like I always call it a B-side market. City, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a B market. So you have to decide, do you want to be like a big
it's the fish deal in the a puddle yeah.
or you want to be like you're not a big deal in an ocean, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, it's personal. I mean, that's yeah. a personal decision that people yeah. have to make. But as an artist starting out, you got a better shot here.
Yeah.
For sure. You yeah. might not get the same exposure that you get in New York, but you could actually take care of yourself and live a life.
Yeah.
But all artists are different. That's yeah. not necessarily important to right. a lot of artists.
Right, right, right.
And then you get trapped here. Then you know. Then you'd yeah. have to. You know, then you're established, and you'd have to take a huge step backwards to
right.
go move
contacts
on.
Contacts and such. I know what you mean.
And you know, look at I have a bigger space than the biggest photographer in Manhattan.
It's
I mean,
incredible.
Annie Leibovitz does not have a space like
right,
I have in
right,
New York.
Right. Well, not to be grim, but I wanted to ask my last question. Like, but do you see, like, is this it? Like, do you see yourself dying in this? Do you know?
Oh,
what I
I'm
mean?
Going from the church to the cemetery. There's no doubt.
It.
I'm going from the church to the cemetery.
Literally, yeah, because you.
But we say that as a joke, but the reality is when he goes to college mm-hmm. and we have a 4.5-year-old, mm-hmm. this building will have been paid off for a couple years already. Mm-hmm. We will be in our mid-60s mm-hmm. and I have no reason to be here. Mm-hmm. Like, I really don't. I'm mm-hmm. looking to retire at that point mm-hmm. and I'm sure at that point I could sell this and I would keep my life very simple, mm-hmm. somewhere warm, mm-hmm. and just
oh, warm.
Retire.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's not a chance that my parents are going to be around
right.
or my wife's parents are going to be around
right.
by then.
But and you talked about your career being deeply intertwined with your identity. Do you see yourself being able to actually retire?
Who knows?
Are you going to putz around always with a camera?
Oh, I bet. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Or maybe I will, at that point, deal with my collections and I will be selling, you know, maybe
yeah,
I would be more
pieces.
Of a dealer or a seller
okay,
of that
okay,
stuff
I
where
see.
I don't even have to depend on it for a living, but
right.
I could do it because I love doing it.
So just looking at photos will do it for you, you think?
Maybe, I don't know. yeah, I mean, I don't have my life planned out that,
no?
that specifically, but I like the idea of not having the pressure to
how far ahead
to
do you
make
think?
Photographs.
How far ahead
I'm
do you plan?
Looking to do, well, I never
just
did
general.
Until I had a baby.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Never ever did.
Really?
And then like, from when Dawn was pregnant, we were starting to make, I was starting to make a game plan for life
okay.
of when this will be paid off and
okay.
when how we paying for this
yeah.
and school and
yeah.
and all that
yeah.
and everything kind of fell into place for us mm-hmm. and I don't know that it's going to work. I got to keep going at this for another 15, 20
right,
years.
Right.
But in retrospect, I realized that 15, 20 years ain't that long. I
right,
mean,
right.
considering I've been here 10 years ago, it feels
yeah.
like I moved in yesterday.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, again, I really, this space is incredible. I think this is turning into a kind of a cool attribute of my show is not having a permanent space of my own, being welcomed in other people's spaces. So I really appreciate
yeah, cool.
your time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to show your support through comments and reviews.